shot. Oh, baby, what a play.
Jeff Bedoten with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place for the show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I discuss minicamp. Joe, before we get into minicamp, though, since the last time we talked, they had the charity softball game of Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And, of course, because he's Patrick Mahomes, Mahomes hit 6 home runs in it. anyhow, Joe, I was curious if this brought back some memories. Didn't you guys have a softball kind of tournament or something for charity back when you were playing?
We did. Yeah, we played in a couple of softball games. Timmy used to host a really nice one. Grunhard. So Grunny used to host.
I'm so used to Grunny that I was thrown by that.
That's true. Yeah, I got thrown by the Timmy. But Tim Grunhard used to host a really, really fun. We used to play the Raiders. Any Raiders that were, in the area or they'd fly them in or whatever, we would do that against them. That was always fun. Those were super well attended. And
probably not Bo Jackson, though, right? I assume.
No, I think that would have been a ringer. That would have been a little bit of a ringer. I think we may have lost that game. But we used to do that, and it was fun. And then we do some internal charity softball stuff with the team. And yeah. The Chiefs organization is always amazing as it relates to getting into the community and making the players accessible and seeing them in a different light, having fun, right? I mean, the fans, I think, are the most important aspect of that, not because, obviously the players are willing to come out to those things because the fans make them want to be accessible because they enjoy it. It's not overwhelming for the players. I mean, I always go back to my Joe Montana stories about how much he loved living in Kansas City because he got to be Joe Montana, the guy, and not, living in a compound in a, a gated, high security house. He lived in a normal house, and kids would come to his door and ask his kids to come out and play and not ask for 100 autographs. Like, it's that kind of acceptance into the community that makes it so much fun for players and why they want to go out and spend, time in the community because the fans and the community make it so worthwhile. It really is an awesome marriage of the team coming together with the community. And anyway, not to go off on a huge tangent, but the charity softball games were always fun. We had a charity basketball team. We were always out doing that during the off season, and just a lot of fun, to be in the Kansas City community.
During the softball or baseball games, how did you do, and how did our pal Danan Hughes do? Because Danan, I know, has quite a baseball background in college. So I'm curious how you did and how Danan did.
Well, I played baseball in high school and actually thought I was going to play baseball in college. Mm-hmm. So I could handle myself out in the field. I generally would play either first base or out in the outfield. I even though I was a catcher in my high school career and could have been in my college career, I wasn't getting behind the plate at 305 pounds, squatting down there right at my knees. But I usually play first base or play in the outfield, and I could carry my weight, no pun intended, playing. Now Danan was at another level. Like, he was our Bo Jackson ringer that I think, we tried to hide and make sure people didn't know that, he was actually a professional baseball player. So we kept him well hidden amongst that. And then all of a sudden, I think about the third time he would come up the bat, people would say, I think he's a little bit of a ringer. But we also, one of my favorite things we used to do was a home run hitting contest. I think we've talked about this on past pods, the home run hitting contest we would have on the softball fields up at River Falls, Wisconsin, at the University of River Falls during training camp. That was always a fun afternoon, was to go out and watch guys swing a bat. Man, I'll tell you, it's fun just to watch athletes out there because, even guys who you wouldn't think, like Derek Thomas, he could hit a ball. You're thinking, Derek Thomas probably could have played any sport professionally, probably, if he put his mind to it, just with his incredible athletic ability. But yeah, so lots of fun, with that kind of stuff. Great to see the players in a different light for the fans, and to get to interact with them in an intimate environment, just see them completely out of character and out of context.
And Joe, before we get to, because obviously people aren't tuning in to hear, this isn't Believe in Chiefs softball or Believe in softball. They're here to hear about minicamp. But before that, I do have a quick story that's good, that's quick, and is very related to this. I think part of the reason Valdez Scantling did this charity softball game was I think it has its roots in Green Bay. You know, that's where he started his career. And Brett Favre, for a long, long time, had a charity softball game. And so I think he might have gotten the idea there. And, you know, when I was working for the Packers, writing for the website, 2005, that was one of my first, assignments. And, I didn't know a lot of people. And Peter King, who was, now with NBC Sports, was a longtime Sports Illustrated writer, had was a connection with Favre. So he showed up, and I was all excited. He had, like, a Royals hat on. And, I don't know anybody. I'm like, oh, this is cool. So I was like, oh, man, you've got a Royals hat on. And he's like, yeah, it's a fitted hat. It's the one, only one that will fit my head. It's like I have an old face. So, and so anyhow, like I'm literally sitting in the dugout. I don't know why I shouldn't be here, sitting here, but next to Brett Favre and his wife. And he's telling somebody, man, did you see how much weight Peter King lost? And I go, yeah. And he had a Royals hat on. And Favre goes, well, who cares about the Royals? Because they're not there for a small part. And I was like, I got defensive. Like, I care about the Royals.
Yeah.
Then that was kind of the end of the conversation. And he pretty
That's much, awesome.
We're going to be back with information, I swear, about minicamp. But first, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports for any sport. BetOnline is your Intel headquarters this season. You have you covered for all your insider sports wagering needs. And it's the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your home. Get into the action today. So head to the website or use your mobile device to join, and be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Joe, the biggest topic of Chiefs minicamp was actually somebody who wasn't there. Chris Jones was not at the 3-day minicamp. He's hoping to get a new contract. Does it matter that he wasn't there? In other words, Joe, does a veteran like him, does he miss something from not being there or not really?
No. Let's be honest, right? I mean, it's Chris Jones. You know, if it's a rookie trying to make the squad, or if it's somebody who's a marginal player, you know, the guy knows the playbook. He knows what he's doing. He's dealing with his contract issues. Now, if he was under contract, I'd expect him to be there. Like, he's kind of technically under contract.
He is under contract. He's just waiting for he's in the last year of his deal.
Yeah, and I think he's in a little bit of a different situation, and I think players understand that. They really do. I mean, there's not a whole list, group of players that are going to be, like, resentful or, saying that, Chris Jones should have been here. Why wasn't he here? They know what he's trying to accomplish. They know how valuable he is. They know that he puts in the work, and I get it. And, these mini camps are great to get the team gelling. I think, Patrick looked really good throwing to receivers. He looks like he's in, like, midseason form, and, looks like he's got the whole foot injury, ankle injury behind him. Looks like he's 100%, which is great. He's bombing home runs and playing softball and doing his thing, which is great, which you want him to do, right? You want him out there in the community being active. I thought, that these mini camps are really for timing for receivers, running backs, maybe the defensive backs, linebackers to a certain degree in coverage. There's not a whole lot of stuff that linemen can do at these kind of mini camps with no pads on. It's just not. You can do some fit and finish stuff, and as linemen, you can do some pass protection things, not fully contact. But, I think these mini camps are almost like a glorified what we used to call skelly or skeleton or 7-on-7, at the end of the day. Let's just be honest about it. So him not being there, look, I'll never forget my first mini camp. we didn't have like a difference between rookie minicamp and minicamp when I was a rookie.
Right.
So we just showed up for minicamp the week after the draft. And one of my favorite minicamp stories was, and stop me, Jeff, if I've told this one before on a previous pod, but Rich Baldinger was a decade long veteran. It may have been more than 10 years. It may have been 12, 13 years veteran by the time, you know, I had met him my rookie year. And, you know, Baldy, as we like to call him, Rich was, there at minicamp. And it was mandatory. And everybody showed up at minicamp back then in the Marty days, unless you literally weren't under contract. But that was not really an issue because my rookie year, everybody had a contract because there was no free agency. Mm-hmm. And so, Rich gets up when we were getting ready to do our running testing. And, I'm fresh out of college. I just, I'm coming out of, Penn. So I'm still feeling the, pressure of being from a small school and I'm trying to impress people. So, of course, when I get asked to run the 40-yard dash and do my shuttle runs, I'm going to do it like I'm at the combine, right? Mm-hmm. Like I want to impress some people and, make the squad and do all that stuff. Well, Rich gets up when it's his turn after guys were very seriously running the 40-yard dash. Rich gets up and he's like looking like so intent on running an unbelievable 40-yard dash. Now, this is a guy that's played well over a decade in the NFL, full-time starter for, 8-10 years. And, like I said, pardon me for not knowing this, but he could have been in his 12th or even 13th year at the time. And he looks like he's going to try to run the 40-yard dash of his life. He's huffing and puffing and he's, stretching and like warming up and getting ready and like gets down on the line of scrimmage and he puts his hand up and he's like ready to go. And when you run the 40-yard dash, back then they didn't have electronic timing. So the coaches did it on a stopwatch, but they did it on your movement, right? Uh-huh. So Rich gets down and I'm thinking this guy is going to try and attempt to run the 40-yard dash of his life. And he gets down and Coach Redding says, who's our strength coach, Dave Redding goes, all right, on your movement, Baldy. And Rich gets down and he looks like he's going to, and then he like pops up and he just does this easy little jog in his 40-yard dash. And we're like, oh my God, Baldy, he had us all snowed, right? Cause we thought he was going to try to run, Usain Bolt. And he just nonchalantly gets out of his stance and just saunters and jogs his 40-yard dash. He may have run that 40-yard dash. It may have taken him 30 seconds to get that 40 yards. And I mean, even Coach Schottenheimer had to laugh a little bit because, Baldy was such a character. And to me, that was like, it just summarized and like epitomized like the difference between the way a 13-year veteran approaches minicamp and like a guy like me coming out of a small college approach minicamp. Right. And I always think back to that. Whenever I think about minicamp, I think about Baldy, pulling a fast one on everybody with his 40-yard dash. And, and that's a story I tell because it is tangentially related to how veterans will look at minicamp, right? It's a chance to get your timing down, get back in the swing of things. I think in the wide receiver room, I think they got some work to do. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of new bodies, a lot of new people, a lot of new timings that need to get done. And, I think MBS actually did make some commentary in some of his, in his commentary that he was really impressed with this wide receiver room. And I think that's important. It's important to get everybody together, get them bonding so that, that we take advantage of every single moment of minicamp because, we've talked about this ad nauseum. You don't get a whole lot of time at camp and it's going to be till the middle of September before this team really gels.
Right.
So you might as well take advantage of it and get everybody there.
It was very timely for you to mention that really funny story about kind of the 40 time and the condition because the Chiefs on Thursday here, the last day of minicamp, did do a somewhat kind of a mini conditioning test. They'll do the real one, like kind of the beginning of training camp, but Andy Reid said he kind of wanted to get his guys ready, kind of get it ready for that when training camp happens. Joe, back to Chris Jones, because that's such a big deal there. The other thing, too, is there's been some talk about he he made some social media posts where kind of the clock is ticking. So it might make fans nervous, but I really would take that with a grain of salt. You know, back before he got this contract that he's on now, he was actually interacting with Le'Veon Bell on social media, kind of saying how, kind of implying that like a holdout was near, like, you know, how Bell famously held out basically for a season. And then he ended up signing this big deal. So again, I there's a lot of time. I mean, he could even miss some of training camp, but I don't think it's necessarily a big deal.
No, as limited time as the players get at this point, you know, yeah, he's going to be just fine. We're going to be fine. I know the Chiefs are going to make this happen. He's too important of a piece of this puzzle. I think we've got the money to do it. We've got the cap room. They've done everything right to keep him there, you know. And, you know, when he puts that Super Bowl ring on, because another little tangential story, right? This is big soup, you know, this week is, you know, Super Bowl ring ceremony. Yeah. And, you know, he puts that ring on and he looks around at the team and the squad that he's helped build and win these two Super Bowls. I think he's going to be calling his agent and saying, all right, you know, let's get this done. Let's make this happen. We don't need to go wild or go crazy, right? We'll get it done. He'll be here for the start of the season, and he's going to get the payday that he deserves. I think the Chiefs are going to make it happen. I really do. I'm not worried about it at all, and I don't think fans should be either.
Another interesting storyline, kind of the running back room. You know, Isaiah Pacheco is recovering from some offseason surgeries, so he wasn't practicing. McKinnon, since he's a veteran, didn't participate in the OTAs. And so there's some room. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's kind of back in the mix. And what he was saying was interesting is that he was actually for Super Bowl week, the scout team receiver for Devontae Smith. And he also took a lot of reps at wide receiver. You know, they were so worried about all the injuries they had at wide receiver with Juju Smith and Tony and things like that. They thought just in case of emergency. And then the last running back note, Joe, kind of an interesting guy flying under the radar, Daryl Henderson, the former Rams running back who started a lot of games in the NFL, was with the Chiefs at camp. So it'll be interesting to see if he hangs on or if he was just kind of a body with so many other bodies not there. So or at least not participating. So kind of some interesting stuff there.
Yeah. And I think one of my favorite things that I read this week coming out of minicamp was Jerick McKinnon's praising of mm-hmm. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, saying he's reliable. He's a locker room guy. He's showing a lot of resilience. And, you know, listen, everybody has to find their place in the locker room and on the field. And, you know, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire can, you know, swallow his pride a little bit and understand that the game changes and you never know, if you just stay patient, good things can happen. You know, you stay healthy, you keep working, you keep grinding, good things happen. I mean, you look at guys like, you know, Tony Richardson, you know, Kimbo Anders. These are Hall of Fame, Chiefs Hall of Famers. These were guys that were on practice squads. They were guys mm-hmm. that got kicked around a little bit at the beginning of their career. And you just look at the resilience and the careers that they built for themselves, and you're like, that's what it's all about. Those are the players that you want to go to battle with, right? Those are the players you want in the locker room. So, listen, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire can keep that resiliency that Jerick McKinnon's mentioning and he can be the locker room guy, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen. And he obviously has the talent. We've seen it. It just needs to maybe click a little bit. So, you know, I give him a lot of credit. Look, it's the off season. We don't have the pressure of the season right now, but we can have these kind of conversations about players. And I'm excited to see how this running back locker room gels and huddle gels as much as the wide receiving one does, because I think the potential is there for this to be a really, really good stable of runners. And I think if they can get together in the locker room and all work together and not work against each other, it could be really special. I you know, unfortunately, I saw some of that go in the opposite direction. You know, when Harvey Williams, you know, kind of really didn't work out as the first round draft pick of my class, you know, and there was tension, and then they go ahead and they draft Greg Hill in the first round, and then Marcus Allen is there. He comes in. As good as those guys were individually, and as much as I enjoyed being around each of them individually, together, something didn't mix. Mm-hmm. And that kind of lack of chemistry and the tension, it's not good. So I'm just happy to see, even though these guys are competitive, and we're all competitive, and players are competitive, and they want to be the guy, right? If you can get the camaraderie and you can build a culture where they want to help each other, it's only going to be good for this team, because you never know, right? We've seen things happen where guys get hurt, things happen, the offensive playbook changes, boom, and next thing you know, you're getting called upon. You better be ready. So I went on a soapbox there, but I'm actually. That's why that excited me, because I was really impressed by the fact that they were praising each other, even though they're under very, very tough competition at that running back position.
Great insight there, Joe. And interesting that you mentioned, you know, the resilience of those running backs like Anders and Tony Richardson. And another guy is a guy we talked about, was Jerick McKinnon. He missed 2 years basically of his NFL career with a knee injury, and then he kind of had like a follow-up to that same and you know, nobody really wanted him when the Chiefs initially signed him, and he's obviously become such a key guy. He was even asked this week, I think it was by Adam Teicher, like whether, you know, if you had taken this been offered this straight up, said, all right, well, this is going to be your career, you're going to win a Super Bowl, but you're going to have these injuries, and you know, it's going to be this. And he just kind of said how it's a journey, that's what life and football is. Joe, the last thing I wanted to talk about, did you see, because I wrote an article about it, did you see Mahomes' new Coors Light ad online?
It's so funny, Jeff. I apologize for not having seen. I know what it is, because I know that they can't do the Coors Light beer, but he can do the Coors Light bear. So I think we're going to have to come back and talk about that one next week. I'll make sure that I check it out, and I hope fans do too, and I hope our listeners do too. But tell us about it. So you tell us about what you think of it.
So it's a credit to that. So last year they did this. It's active NFL players are not permitted to promote alcoholic beverages. So Coors Light had a very clever workaround last year. Here, I'll even get my – for the people who watch our YouTube channel, they have this this Coors, you can't really see it, but this Coors flashlight. So instead of having Coors Light, they had this Coors a Coors
light.
Flashlight. So that was last year. So you're like, what are you going to do now? So they had instead of Coors Light beer, they had a Coors Light bear. And it's a very kind of campy looking bear that he's like hanging out with, playing golf, going to like a house party, grilling with. But kind of the interesting part of this ad, not only did they do the workaround, and it's an ad just on kind of, social media channels. It's not on TV or in print or anything. But I was just kind of curious. You know, Mahomes has been everywhere. We talked about the softball game. He's been at the Kentucky Derby. He was still rehabbing his ankle. He was, and he was in, Texas working with his receivers. And this is earlier in the offseason, the ankle and the Texas training.
This White House, Formula One. He was at the Formula One Grand Prix in Miami. So
everywhere. So yeah, that was a good point. And so I'm like, how did they fit this in? Well, they filmed it in Kansas City in May, and really only took about 2 hours for them to do the shoot. You know, it's only a 1 minute commercial, but I still thought that seemed pretty fast. You know, what do I know about filming and commercials? But also he did add a line near the end of the spot. He's grilling with his Coors Light bear, and he goes, "Here you go, my man," and he like serves him something. It's kind of, whatever. It's not like the greatest line in the world, but cool that Mahomes is like, he's a Madison Avenue darling. He's done enough of these that he's at least comfortable kind of ad-libbing a line here or there.
Yeah, he's pretty natural. I mean, obviously Travis is a natural. He's amazing, obviously, with his, SNL skit and all the other things he does in the entertainment arena. But yeah, Patrick, I think his State Farm commercials, I think he does a pretty good job. I think he comes across as very natural. It's not canned, or he doesn't seem awkward at all. I mean, look, he's still a football player, not a Juilliard trained actor, but he's he really is a natural. I enjoy seeing him because I think he seems like he's having fun with it. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't, you could just, I haven't talked to him about it. I don't know it personally, but like, he just seems like he gives off this aura that he's enjoying it. I don't know what it is about his performances, whether it's on TV commercials or, you know, doing things like this, Coors Light Bear or, you know, making appearances. He just seems like he's enjoying himself. And I think that's important, you know, because a lot of quarterbacks and players that are in the spotlight like that can put a lot of pressure on themselves and to be perfect at everything they do. Cause he's an absolute, you know, perfectionist when it comes to his football and the way that he plays football, but he also has fun when he plays football too. You know, the way he approaches the game, the way he gives it back to other players and trash talks a little bit. I love that about him. I think that's what makes him really, really good. I think that's what makes a lot of the great ones good and why they get to that level. You know, that ultra performance level of the Joe Montanas, the Patrick Mahomes, the Tom Brady's, they just really seem like they're enjoying themselves when they're playing the game. And that's what I love most about watching him.
Totally. And we're going to get to see like more of him kind of, you know, off the field. There's the match that he and Kelsey are going against Clay Thompson, Steph Curry in a golf match at the end of the month. And then there's that Netflix show, The Quarterback, that some previews have been. So it's going to be, it'll be fun. We'll get to see more of Mahomes and what he's like. Well, if you enjoy this show presented by BetOnline, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.